This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Reign of Troy Radio, the very first ever video podcast. It is episode 435 coming to you on Monday, August 1st. We're going to talk about Pac-12 Media Day, which went down in downtown on Friday, and so much more here about the USC Trojans. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us now here on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. Our email address is reignoftroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC,
Second What's Bruin Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along here in the Reign of Troy studio with my co-host, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are doing this. We are finally doing our first ever video pod.
It's a little wild, isn't it? It's a little crazy.
It's crazy. We've talked about this. We've thought about it, and we never sort of did that endeavor, but here we are, and I feel bad for the people listening on, you know, Apple Podcasts, because they're going to miss out on any visual bits, but that's all good.
They have no idea what I'm doing right now.
I can't believe you are doing that on camera.
It's shocking, really.
Unbelievable.
It really is.
Yeah. So if you're listening, if you're listening on a podcast app on like Wednesday, she's got like a clown hat, a huge nose, like Mickey Mouse ears and the whole bit.
Can you imagine during the season when we're doing like reaction shows that people will be able to get to see my face as I'm fuming over something?
You're going to become like a GIF and stuff.
Please, God, no.
Yeah.
I would rather not.
It could happen. It absolutely could happen. So look forward to that as we go on throughout the season. SC obviously opens the season on September 3rd. 3 p.m. against Rice at the Coliseum. And that means after the game, we'll be here to do a car cast talking about USC and their potential win over the Rice Owls. We will talk more about that when we get there.
If it's not a win, then yes, you should all tune in to the video.
Everybody will be in that car cast. Yeah,
tune 100%. Into the video because my head may be on fire. Let's just put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into this where we always start with new reviews. We got a new one over on Apple Podcasts. It's 5 stars from XELA00412. Sounds like a license plate or something.
I'm going with Zella on this one.
Zella? Okay. I dig it. It says, what the truck? Maybe it is a truck. Hmm. I don't know. It says, what the truck? How could a listener give you guys a 1-star review? Doesn't he realize how this impacts Apple Podcasts' algorithm? For future reference, he could vent in the comments and still give a 5-star review. I mean, true.
Yeah. Listen, we always welcome reviews. We accept the opinions that people share. We do also acknowledge that, a 1-star review, you know, if you have a complaint and you still listen to us, like, we would prefer if you gave us like a 4-star review and we could maybe work to bump it back up to a 5. A 1 impact the algorithm. But thank you, Zella, for coming back in with the 5-star to sort of reset the balance there. The one thing that I am very grateful for is that every time we do get a 1-star review, we tend to then get a couple people at least who come in and say like, hey, I'm going to throw you my 5-star review because you guys like the show. So we appreciate that. And go and leave your reviews as well. If you guys got to give us 1-star reviews, then we can't really help it. But we will read it on the air, and then you may get people coming back and saying, what the truck? So,
I mean, The right side is we're going to leave. We're going to read the every review that's on there.
100%. No matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you, Zella, for the review. And as always, you can leave us more reviews over on Apple Podcasts. 5-star and we'll be like your best friend for forever. But Alicia, let's get into the news. Alicia, the big news here is this from the LA Times that Carol Folt apparently shut down the Pac-12 expansion talks last year. What's this?
Yeah, this one is interesting. It's almost savage when you hear the headline. Apparently, there was a meeting in the wake of Texas and Oklahoma leaving for the SEC. There was a meeting among Pac-12 sort of power makers where they were considering bringing in some Big 12 schools that had approached the conference about joining. And they're in the middle of like this presentation. This is all according to the LA Times. They're in the middle of this presentation about whether or not they're going to do the sort of pros and cons of these teams coming in. And Carol Folt like shuts it down, like straight up. It's just like, why are we even thinking about this? Why are we even talking about this? There was a concern about like, you know, we're already having trouble with revenue shares and you guys want to add more people who are going to take a share of that revenue. Like, she shut it down. And then a year later, she is the one that spearheads USC moving to the Big Ten. The optics are definitely, is USC the villain?
I mean, it certainly looks a little like it, right? Like, I think it's incredible that for so long, Carol Folt was sort of the enemy of a lot of the SC fan base. And we talked about it here on the pod. Like, it wasn't necessarily fair. It was super undeserved. And here she is. And I think that depending on what school you're a fan of, you absolutely can look at it and say, you know, Carol Folt is, you know, not the best move here for the conference as a whole in the history of the Pac-12 moving forward. But as far as SC is concerned, if you're talking about making more money after Texas and Oklahoma go to the SEC, we talked about it last year. What was bringing in Oklahoma State going to do? What was bringing in Kansas State and TCU and Baylor really going to do for the conference? So I sort of get it, right? Like, I don't think it's crazy to poo-poo that idea.
Yeah, that was sort of my thought too, is at the time, I think we talked about it and I feel like it was the kind of thing where there isn't enough clear positive movement behind bringing in any of these. Each one of the teams that USC, that the Pac-12 was considering was, you know, I guess maybe you get the Dallas-Fort Worth market, maybe, but not really, because it's not like TCU is the biggest brand in that market. Maybe you go for Baylor's money, but then there's sort of the religious aspect there that can get complicated. There's always been talk of BYU, and that comes with its religious aspect of dealing with this whole Sundays thing. Like, there was cultural questions and all this kind of stuff. So like, I totally get why this wasn't something that USC certainly was going to push at the time. I think the only thing that could have saved this whole headache around realignment and everything is if years ago, Texas, Oklahoma, USC, Oregon, UCLA, et cetera, had gone full bore into merging the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and going for their own little super conference that was going to be sort of controlled by the USCs and the Texases and the Oklahomas of the world. There were a lot of hurdles to that, though. And Texas was always going to be difficult to deal with, too. So I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense at the time. And I think that the Pac-12 probably made the right decision not to, even though I don't think they could have imagined that USC and UCLA would leave. Like, I think.
What do you consider the Pac-12 there? Do you consider the Pac-12 as it stands now, which is essentially the Pac-10, if we're going to take SC and UCLA out of there? Because if that's the case, then no, I don't think this was the best move for the Pac-10, or the leftovers of the Pac-12, right? Like, but at the end of the day, like, if you're talking about SC being in a conference with a media market, do you want Manhattan, Kansas, or do you want Manhattan in New York? Even though that's Rutgers, and Rutgers obviously isn't New York's football team exactly. But, you know.
I don't know. I just think this whole thing, I'm not trying to be naive, but like, do I think that Carol Folt had it in her head at the time that she was going to green light USC leaving to the Big Ten?
Probably not.
I don't think so. So I don't know that this was like a savage move by USC. I think it was business as it was then and business as it is now. Like, I would love to know a timeline on USC and UCLA approaching the Big Ten and sort of when that all started happening. Like, that would be fascinated to learn that. But somehow I just don't, I get the feeling that if it had gone on that long, it would have leaked earlier than literally the day before it was going to happen.
Right. Yeah. And well, when she shuts it down 15 minutes into a meeting, that makes it super easy to, you know, end this from the start. So that's the latest report from the LA Times that came out a couple of days ago. Other news to get to here. This one may be more on the worrisome side. Malachi Nelson, who's now the number one recruit in the country in the 24/7 Sports composite for next year at quarterback, USC's commitment out of Los Alamitos. He's suddenly looking at Texas A&M and went down to College Station. Is this a concern?
I mean, I don't think it rises to concern yet. I think it's recruiting. I think that recruiting trips at this point are too big of a thing that like a high school kid can do that to get mad at them for taking a trip at this point. I can't do it. Do I think that Malachi Nelson is in danger of flipping to Texas A&M at this moment? No, I don't think so. I think that any flip of Malachi Nelson to Texas A&M will take a long time and will have USC contributing to the reasons. Like, if USC utterly tanks this year and things just don't look like they're moving in the right direction, USC is going to lose recruits. But the moment USC starts winning games, like, these dudes are not going to be looking back. So a July visit to Texas A&M, it's not sort of raising my blood pressure at all. Would it be better if he wasn't taking visits, if he was completely shut down and you didn't even have to think about the possibility of anybody coming in from Malachi Nelson? Absolutely. But he's the number one quarterback in the class. Like, you'd be naive to think that he doesn't have a million people in his ear trying to get him to flip, trying to give him an offer. Frankly, it's USC's job to keep him home. Like, it was USC's job to keep a million other Southern California quarterbacks home, and they utterly failed at that job over the last few years. So if Malachi Nelson goes somewhere else, that means that somebody dropped the ball at USC. That means Lincoln Riley dropped the ball at USC. He can't afford to let that happen. So it either happens, and that's a very, very bad sign, or this is all just sort of summertime recruiting smoke.
The way I look at it, you look at the track record that Lincoln Riley has had at recruiting quarterbacks, there's no need to worry here. It's early on. Doomsday scenario, if he does flip to the Aggies, like, I would have to imagine there's going to be some sort of, you know, recoil to that, where SC would have some other option, right? Like, the other thing is, he's the class of 2023 guy. Caleb Williams is here for the next 2 years. Like, I don't think this is anything to get overly worried about at this point. Just let things go, as you said, and see how the season goes. And if SC wins, yeah, they're going to have a million different recruits. The other thing is, even when SC has botched the quarterback recruiting stuff, which, you know, over the last decade has happened, how many times? Guys that should have gone to SC: Tua, Matt Corral,
Bryce Young,
DJ
right? Ungulele.
Like, yeah, the list goes on and on.
Tathan Martell.
Yeah, like, the list goes on and on of all those guys. Costello,
like KJ Costello.
Yeah, like, the list goes on and on of guys that nearly came to SC but didn't. But who did SC get in their place? Sam Darnold. They pulled Sam Darnold out of their ass, sort of. Kind of out of nowhere. They get Keaton Slovis. Yeah, three-star guy out of Arizona. But Keaton Slovis at one point was looking to be like a day one NFL draft pick. And then SC couldn't end up developing him. So,
have you seen the list of the Heisman odds?
No,
for this year
is he on there?
Yeah, there are of the people with top 10 Heisman odds. There are four USC quarterbacks or former. There's Keaton Slovis, Jackson Dart, Caleb Williams, and then a former USC quarterback commit in Bryce Young. It's incredible. So yeah, if you lose Malachi Nelson, yes, it will suck. Absolutely, he's the guy you want. But it's not like Lincoln Riley is ever hurting for quarterbacks who want to come play for him.
You remember Jack Sears?
Yeah, Jack Sears.
You ever just stop and think and look back at
the good old days?
Jack Sears. Jack Sears was a thing. Yeah,
Jack Sears was very much a thing. He was the next Sam Darnold until he wasn't. So
yeah.
Yeah,
things have absolutely changed at quarterback. But yeah, that's going to wrap it up for the news here before we start talking about Pac-12 Media Day, which went down on Friday. I want to dig into the chat here. We got a shout out from the College Football Bros. It says, graphics are great. I'll take that compliment. Thank you. John Bueller says, look at this. Look at how nice this is.
Yeah.
Matthew Moreno says, Michael, what hat is that? It's the Frisco Rough Riders.
Yeah.
Out of Frisco, Texas.
One of the things I'm excited about is getting to do these video podcasts. It means people are going to get to see your massive collection of random hats.
Yeah, except it's gonna look like we're absolutely like the ripoff of Tunnel Vision, where, you know, Shotgun had his backwards hats, I'll have them forwards, and it's
Just two sides of the same coin.
Sides of the same hat. Yeah.
Two sides of the same hat. Yeah. David asked, where is the dog? Sadly, Jessie is in her crate. She cannot be trusted to not lay on the ground and chew the things that are the loudest.
Yeah.
We learned that the last time we recorded podcasts.
Well, last time we recorded, it was your AirPods.
Oh yeah, she was literally munching on my AirPods, which survived somehow. But yeah, that she does that. But
yeah,
we love her. But you know, she hasn't quite learned to be quiet enough to be a guest of the podcast. But one day, maybe we'll have her sitting.
She'll be
right back there.
Yeah.
Chilling out, and then you all can just watch the dog instead of watching us. That'll be nice.
Yeah, and she'll call right into the rant line, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also Ross asked if I'm optimistic today. Optimistic Alicia's in the house.
There you go. And with that, let's move on to talking about the Pac-12 Media Day. And the media poll came out on Friday at Pac-12 Media Day. USC picked to finish third in the Pac-12 behind Utah and Oregon. The interesting thing, though, is there was a total of 33 voters in this. 26 people picked the Utah Utes, who are the defending Pac-12 champs. 26 people. Only 2 picked Oregon and 5 picked SC. At SC, still picked third. UCLA is fifth. Oregon State fifth. UCLA fourth. Oregon State fifth. Washington State, Stanford, Cal, ASU, Arizona, and Colorado brings up the rear in 12th. Alicia, did the media get it right here?
I think they did. I think there's too much uncertainty at USC and Oregon. Oregon lost some really big hitters in terms of their players, and also they're starting over with a new coach. And, you know, I think they made a very interesting hire, but they made a hire of a guy who has no head coaching experience, no lone defensive coordinator experience either. He's basically just a recruiting guru, so he has a lot to prove. I would be skeptical about Oregon hitting the ground running very well. USC has been super active in the transfer portal, but at the same time, they 54 scholarship players have been sort of transitioned out of this roster. USC's brought in a bunch of guys who I think we all agree are intriguing, but aside from Caleb Williams and Jordan Addison, and I think I personally put Shane Lee in this category too. Those are the big impact guys that I'm very, very certain will have an impact. But the rest of them, and this is no offense to any of them, because I think everybody that USC added has some real potential. I'm really excited about Brendan Rice and Romello Height from Auburn on the defensive side. could be an absolute gamer for USC. But all of those guys are not like, USC brought in one Biletnikoff Award winner. None of the other guys they brought in are national award winners. So like, you can't bet on this being a storming turnaround of a roster that's been completely reworked. Right. Skepticism should rule when it comes to USC. Excitement. Optimistic Alicia is here to say she's extremely excited. It's like, we're almost there. It's like, I'm pumped to see this team. I'm excited to see this team. But I think the media is correct to say, you know what? No, USC needs to prove it before we pick USC to go toe-to-toe with Utah. Utah has Kyle Whittingham. We know what he is. We know what that team is. We know what they can do.
Cam Rising at quarterback.
Cam Rising, it looked great at quarterback last year. They have a system in place. They have good players. I think that this is entirely fair. And if at the end of the year, USC or Oregon are at the top of that of the standings, good on those teams because they answered the questions. But those questions don't go away. Like, they still exist. Skepticism rules for both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you look at the poll 1 to 12, and I'm struggling to find any sort of complaints here. I think
it's pretty tight.
You have to put Utah 1. After that, I think it's a question of, do you go with someone like Oregon, SC, UCLA? And I'm fine with the order, Oregon, SC, and UCLA in that order. Any sort of order, I think, is fine there. And after that, everything sort of falls in line. Oregon State being ahead of Washington sounds crazy, but look how good Oregon State was last year. They bring so many of those guys back, too. Like, the, I want to see what it's like for Jonathan Smith continuing already. He's like in year, what, 5 in Corvallis, which sounds crazy to me. Like, yeah, you never know what to expect out of Stanford these days.
I think Stanford, if anyone is potentially egregiously underrated, it might be Stanford. I think Tanner McKee could be one of those quarterbacks that just launches Stanford.
Were they like 3-9 last year?
They were not good last year, but
they got all of their positive plays in one game against SC.
Pretty much, yes. Yes, this is true. And they will do it again this year, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really interested to see what happens with Arizona. I did not think that they made the right move by going with Jed Fish there, but he seemingly says the right things, and I really liked how they played last year. They reminded me of sort of like of Colorado in 2015, the year that they were close, and every game they lost by like a touchdown or within a score at least, and then they came back the next year and actually won the Pac-12 South. Kind of feel those vibes from Arizona. Not that they're going to win the South this year, but more so that they're going to be in games and really kind of test people. So them at 11th, I think, might be end up aging poorly if they can string together a couple of wins. But I don't know. The media poll in general, I thought, went well as a whole.
Yeah, I really can't complain. Also, media polls are a crapshoot.
Yeah.
There's no winning. Like, no one wins here. If they get it wrong, it happens all the time. If they get it right, no one gets an award. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the media day as a whole went down on Friday, and you weren't able to go. I went with our friend Jake Merrifield from the What's Bruin show. And I gotta say, I don't know that you missed anything. It was like probably the most disappointing and okay. I say disappointing Pac-12 media days. I don't know what my expectations were, but it was just like a general mess session.
Were you expecting like fist fight in the middle between and Bones?
It was just like I walked away and I'm talking to Jake and I'm like, what did we learn here? I don't know. I don't know. First of all, it was at the Novo Theater in downtown, which is formerly the Club Nokia. And they did it in this weird way where...
I think that's where I saw Thrice last year.
I saw Led Zeppelin there. But the club is nice for music. I don't know that I'd have a mini event there, especially when there's, you know, lunch and there's a Radio Row and all that stuff, and they sort of just kind of threw those things in different parts. You kept having to take elevators up one floor, but you couldn't take it all the way up to the other place. Like, it was like you were in a video game, going through different levels. It was very bizarre logistically, but I digress. Let's talk about the things that were said there. And I don't know that there's anything that is overall like surprising. George Kliavkov gets out and is asked about the state of the conference. And obviously he's going to be positive and look forward and talk about the good things, because Pac-12 Media Day is about drumming up PR for the conference, right? And he's asked about SC and UCLA, and he gets to those questions, but he also mentioned it in the opening, saying as a conference, we are, of course, very disappointed by the decisions of SC and UCLA to leave the Pac-12 and a century of tradition and rivalries after 2024. That said, SC and UCLA have been proud members of the Pac-12 for almost a century. Despite their decision, we cherish their relationship with their student athletes, coaches, staff, faculty, alumni, and fans. And for that reason, I personally have instructed everyone at our conference to make sure that the student athletes are given every opportunity to compete and succeed for as long as they remain in the Pac-12, which sort of led to the awkwardest moment of the day when he was asked, in the unlikely event that in the next couple of years, SC or UCLA made the playoff, besides money that the conference get, what would the benefit of the Pac-12 be? And Kliavkov says, well, they're Pac-12 schools for the next 2 years. We're rooting for their student athletes. To which the reporter from the New York Times says, why? Because that's the right thing to do, says Kliavkov. And yeah, like, I don't know what he's, what is he,
what
supposed,
is he supposed to say?
To say?
I mean, the money that the conference would get from either of those teams winning the championship would matter to the conference.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Could help the teams in the conference, you know, lift themselves up a little bit. So you can't like poo-poo that at all. Yeah. I don't know what else, what more you want from the Pac-12 in that scenario. Like, is it better for them or worse for them if that scenario comes true? If I'm the Pac-12, yeah, I want that money. Like, that money, like, there's no other...
Yeah, 100%.
Kliavkov can't say, like, he's going to say because it's the right thing to do, but, like, in reality, it's like, would you turn down that money? Like, we don't necessarily get to control that. It's not like they've helped USC or UCLA win championships over the last, you right. know, 10 years. Not that they've been in great position at any point. Well, at a couple points, USC was, but...
Wouldn't it be better than the inverse?
Yeah.
They get to the Big Ten and then...
They win, yeah.
Then they make the playoffs and then the Pac-12 has no money to show for it. Like, yeah. I don't know. It was very weird.
You got to want USC and UCLA to be as marketable and as successful over the next 2 years as they possibly yeah. can. Like, you don't want UCLA and USC to fall off a cliff.
Yeah. I mean, you might...
You might laugh at it, but like...
Yeah, and you know, I understand that the Pac-12 has egg on their face, and I really do feel for Kliavkov because I don't think this is all his fault.
It's
certainly.
Not. He seems like a good commissioner. It, like,
it's the culture of everything that was before him, right? Like, so it's not necessarily his fault. He's the one that has to sort of deal with the mess left by the exit of SC and UCLA, but nonetheless, that's where things are. And then let's talk about Lincoln Riley. Alicia, did you have any first thoughts about the Lincoln Riley press conference at all?
I guess I have a question for you as the person who was in the room. Is this like the first time where like someone didn't win the press conference? Not that he like lost the press conference, but like what I've heard is just like it was like, meh, whatever. Like, it's not like he like blew people out of the water with his with his, you know, charisma or anything like that.
I'm not going to say that I don't know that he could have won the press conference. Obviously, it's Pac-12 Media Day. Anyone can win a press conference saying the right things.
I've seen coaches every year yeah. win the press conference.
I thought
so.
Chip Kelly won his press conference. Yeah. His press conference was great. And I thought that he deflected questions when he needed to. He answered them when he needed to. He did all those things. I think for Lincoln Riley, it was difficult because he gets saddled with all the expectations questions. And then on top of that, the Big Ten questions. And then stuff that he just can't explain or has to explain in a way that makes him sound sort of like the bad guy in college football when he gets asked about going out and recruiting Jordan Addison. Why do I always mix the names up? Jordan Addison.
It's two first names, so.
It's true. Jordan Addison, and how that was NIL a factor, was this a factor, was that a factor? At one point he was asked about Kyler Murray and what it was like to have the 4-hour study hall thing in his contract. Like, there were a lot of things. The Pat Narduzzi call was asked, and obviously he's going to give a non-answer to that. Like, I don't know that Lincoln Riley failed at this press conference. I just, he got questions that he was inevitably going to get, and a lot of those there wasn't going to be a satisfying answer to. That said, let's talk about the expectations. He was asked about them, and he said, the people we brought in here, the whole staff we brought in here, we didn't come to play for second. We are not wired that way. We came here competitively to win championships, win them now, and to win them for a long time. That will always be our expectation. And the follow-up was, well, what is your expectation for this year? And he said, to win the championship. Alicia, we've talked about this on the pod extensively. We just did it last week about the expectations for the Trojans going into year one. What do you say? Because I think you and I are in the mindset that no, the expectation is not to win a championship in year one. But if you're Lincoln Riley and you say those things, what do you think?
If I had a dollar for every time I heard a coach talk about their goal being winning the championship, even though that might not be a realistic goal, I would have a few more dollars in my bank account than I currently do. Like, this is just like, this is the standard line. And maybe, you know, a decade ago, I would have gotten pulled in with this about like, yeah, they understand the expectations at USC by saying they're going to win championships. But like, I've just listened to it one too many times. Like, it literally means nothing. Every coach is going to say it, and they should. I'm not saying that they shouldn't. Lincoln Riley has no business walking into USC and saying anything but that he expects to compete for championships, because yes, that's why you take the USC job. Like,
yeah,
when you take the USC job, especially leaving a place like Oklahoma, like you're doing so because you want to set yourself up to better win championships. Like, that's the long and short of it. So yes, come out and say you want to compete for championships. Does that mean that I'm going to change my expectations based on that? No, because Clay Helton said that every year too.
Right.
And we saw what happened every year with those teams. Like, just setting that as an expectation doesn't mean that you have the capacity at this moment to do it. And as I've said over and over again, Lincoln Riley could be the greatest head coach in the history of football, and I still don't think, like, Nick Saban in his prime could walk into this team, and I still don't think that this team would be one that I put money on to win the title. Like, so many things need to go right. It's just, I'm not going to hedge that bet. Lincoln Riley should be pushing that to the players, though, that he has expectations of them acting like champion title contenders in their preparation, which, if they want to have even a slightly decent season, like if they want to go 8-4 even, they need to go into this season preparing as though they are competing for that kind of level. So yeah, it works.
Yeah. The way I see it, this is, if you're a coach, if you're a competitor, obviously you want to win everything. Caleb Williams was asked the same question, and he said that he wants to win every game. And then Shane Lee was talking about expectations, and he says that expectations are the best when they are set behind closed doors and you're not answering to the expectations outside of the room. And I think that's probably the most objective answer, like, in total here. But the reality is that coaching is about motivation, and you're going to get one of two things at these press conferences. You're either going to get, A, we're going to win a championship, or B, no, we're not even going to talk about championships. We have to win today. And then win tomorrow and all those things. Like, those are all just ways to focus and ways to coach. So it doesn't matter. I don't think Lincoln Riley should be judged on whether or not SC wins a championship in year one. But if he wants to put the standard there so that way he's never changing the standard, then yeah, of course, do it. Like, absolutely. Do what works as a coach and what is going to be a motivational tool for you to get the most out of your players.
You just need to sort of pass this test. You setting that to win the championship expectation out in the media, that needs to be a daily sort of, okay, so are you doing studying like you want to win a championship? Are you lifting weights like you're doing so because you want to win a championship? Right. Like, I tend to agree with the idea that you can talk about winning championships, but the real fact of the matter is players at USC should go in thinking we will win every game that we play. And I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation. Like,
no,
stuff happens and you might not win every game that you play, but this USC team, as you know, someone in the KCAT in the comments says, this is not optimistic, Alicia. It's like, I get it. I'm not pumping the sunshine, but I will say the thing that is always very frustrating about watching USC is that you legitimately can go into 99% of the games and say, this is a game that USC could win. And if I were anyone on this roster, I would go in and see, I go down this schedule and say, like, why couldn't this team beat Notre Dame? Why couldn't this team beat, you know, every team on the current schedule? Yes, this team could do that. They should go into each game saying, we expect to win this game because that's the level that USC will want to play at. What you want to happen doesn't always happen, but right. That should be the expectation for sure. And if you'd go ahead and follow that, then you do go on to win championships.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, I'm just amazed at how different the same message can be for everybody, which is every coach is all about preparation and not getting ahead of yourself, but also setting goals. Right. But they just go about it a different way. And I know that everyone loved to hate on Clay Helton for saying things about winning the Pac-12 South, but we talked about it extensively. It's the same exact thing that Pete Carroll would have said.
Pete Carroll every year.
Pete Carroll talked about winning the Pac-10 more than anything else because he had to win the Pac-10 to go to the Rose Bowl, and then that's what you could control. And this is a different setup. And the other thing is Lincoln Riley said championship. He didn't say what championship.
He said the championship.
He said the championship. What is the championship?
Could it be?
Maybe he just means beating UCLA. It's the city championship.
The city championship could be the Pac-12 championship, could be the national championship. Could be the Cheez-It Bowl championship. You know, you never know. It's an open-ended conversation there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Alicia, let's get into the mailbag before you open it up and dive into the chat and get all your questions. You guys listening to us here on YouTube, hit us with questions. Put question in the beginning of your question that way we can see your question in the chat.
Preferably in all caps question, because then it'll make it a little bit easier to track. I've already seen a couple people in there doing a Q or a question stuff. So you're on the right track, but all caps question will just make it easier to not miss your question. If that's what you're in there for.
Yeah. Let's start with stuff we got offline first. A tweet from Maskless says, I'm really intrigued with this kid, Tackett Curtis, as a freshman. You see him starting as a middle linebacker. This kid's football IQ is high enough for such a position. Congrats, Alicia and Michael, on your move from podcasting to live video.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Maskless. Do I see him starting as a middle linebacker as a true freshman? I hope not. I, too, am very excited about Tackett Curtis. I think just the moment I heard the Matt Grootegood comparison, I was all in. I love every little bit of information I've seen from this kid. So, yes, get very excited. But I'm also of the opinion that there are certain positions that you never, ever want a true freshman starting. You don't want to be in a position where you have to start a true freshman at middle linebacker. You don't want to have to be in a position to start a true freshman at quarterback. You don't want to have to be in a position to start true freshman on the offensive line. You know, wide receivers, we've seen true freshmen go out and be incredible. Corners can do it. Safeties, maybe not quite as easily, but I think you can have those guys come in and make that mark and feel like, okay, it's just because he's so much better. If you have Tackett Curtis as your middle linebacker, that means that one of the guys on your squad right now didn't develop the way that I would hope to see, you know, someone like Julian Simon develop, or, you know, right. Raylan Goforth continue to move forward, or you know, there's some guys there that you just like to see take that role themselves. If Tackett Curtis is so good that he can't get on the field, if he can't not be on the field, then that would be amazing. It's just the chances of that happen, like, weren't, you know, he might be very, very good, but you would need to talk about like the most generational player in the history of USC football to, for me to say that that's exactly what will happen. So yeah, give me a sophomore Tackett Curtis starting, so that then we don't have to watch freshman mistakes. Like, I'm not interested in watching freshman mistakes if you don't have to.
So anti-freshman.
I am. Yeah.
For me, it comes down to, will it make sense?
Yeah.
If it makes sense, then yeah, go for it. If he's the guy, I'm interested to see what happens to his body. He was what, 6'2", 215 right now as a high school senior in Louisiana. Like,
yeah.
There's not a lot of 6'2", 215 dudes starting at linebacker in college football. So he's someone who can play all over the field, hence the Gruden good comparison. I want to see what that actually translates to, mm-hmm. And what it means in this defense. And I think that once we get a sense of what this USC defense is going to be like under Alex Grinch this year, then we can sort of have a sense of like, okay, yes, he's definitely going to be ahead of X, Y, and Z, or no, he's not, because SC's got this guy and this guy and this guy who are playing up to expectations. So I think it's a little early to say. We'll see how things go from there. Marcelo messaged us on Slack and said, how different will the offense look? Zone read, spread? Will it look more or less the same, but executed and planned better? I don't know that it's going formationally look completely different. I think that you're going to see tight ends split out wide. You're not going to see, you know, I formation stuff. But I think that expect to see more in terms of play calling, more things that involve the run game, because one of the things that Oklahoma did so well under Lincoln Riley was run the football. And SC's running game was so telegraphed, where they go into the pistol and it was obvious they were going to run the football. And you knew if they were going to run right or left, dependent on, you know, where the tight end was lining up, who was really an H-back, and all those things. I expect that sort of telegraphed nature of the offense is going to be probably the biggest difference for USC going forward.
Yeah, like this isn't going to be a drastic change in terms of, like you said, the formations and stuff. Like, the offense is probably going to look similar. The execution hopefully will be drastically different.
100%.
And, yeah. And like you said, I think the biggest change that we're going to see is it has a lot more to do with play calling.
And play design.
Play design, the timing of when they go into a certain formation and what they do out of it. If I, you know, I look forward to not having the foresight of when USC is running left or right based on the formation, because I should never be able to do that. I am not a tactical mind in the slightest. That should not be something that I was able to identify, and I was doing it for the offenses USC has had over the last few years. So I look forward to being surprised by what Lincoln Riley does, because things are just designed better. So yeah.
Yeah. Top Trojan fan says, with 54 players rotating out of the roster, so many transfers coming in, how hard do you think it will be to create cohesiveness within the team? I would imagine it'd be awfully difficult, right?
I think it's I keep saying this, it's unprecedented. I don't know how long it will take to have that many players replaced and everybody fit in perfectly. It's possible that the cohesiveness will gel immediately, because people are more on the same page and people are moving in the same direction, and it's sort of a fresh start with a new coaching staff, new strength trainers, new assistant coaches, and all of that kind of stuff. And that might get people sort of like marching in the same direction, especially because the transfers who have come in have chosen those coaches to join, have been chosen by those coaches to join for whatever reason, whether it be mentality or physical ability. And then the guys who stayed on the roster, I suppose people keep saying I'm not optimistic Alicia today. Here comes some optimistic Alicia. The guys who are still on the roster are there because they were allowed to stay on the roster. Like, the only reason you have 54 players rotating out is because there was some roster management there that people were told to go, which means that the guys that are there on this roster are the guys that they want to be there.
Right.
And I hope that that means that they're the guys with the right mindset, and the guys with the right mindset on working together, that could be really jump-started quickly to get that cohesiveness together.
Yeah, I think the cohesiveness comes together in that it's new for everybody.
Yeah.
And so it's not just going to be new for some guys and not for anyone else. It's going to be new for everybody because of the situation that it's a new offense and on a new team with new coaches and all that stuff. So that should help from that standpoint. Last question before we jump into the YouTube chat here. SJ in Santa Barbara, USC beats Rice 24-21, scoring a last-minute touchdown to pull ahead. The Trojans struggle in the red zone, having to kick 3 field goals. They failed to score in the third quarter. What does Alicia and Michael's first car cast of the season sound like, and how worried should I be?
Remember Washington a couple of years ago? I think I'll be disappointed. I think my refrain will be, this is what I was telling you guys on August 1st when we had our first video podcast about how, you know, you can't know how the team will come together. It might take some time. This is unprecedented. Don't necessarily get carried away by the hype. This team will have this team will have to go through some struggles. So it will be okay. It'll be fine.
Yeah. The long-term success, I think, is definitely there. It's day one is going to be the question mark. Okay. YouTube. Patrick says, will USC ever hope to be as great of a program as Ohio State?
Sir.
Last I checked, USC had a better record against the Buckeyes than the Buckeyes do against SC.
That's what I'm saying.
I haven't triple checked, but pretty sure I'm double checked. Jorge says, Alicia, have you changed your mind about situational mastery to your list of things to look forward to?
I mean, situational mastery is a good thing if it's actually something that exists and can be completed instead of just, you know, it's just like championships. Like, you can say championships all you want. That doesn't mean that you actually can go out there and do it. So, yeah, I love situational mastery so long as it's a show, don't tell situation.
Situational mastery is such a good phrase that it sucks that it was ruined. Josh says, do you think it has sunk in yet to Big Ten fans that SC has a vast winning record against the conference, or they continue to pretend ignorance? SC is 69-29-2 all time against the Big Ten. Yeah, that record is pretty much speaks for itself. Alex says, would it make sense for SC to build a small campus in Indiana next to Chicago? Many Big Ten teams will be within 2 to 4 hours of travel time. USC can rent the campus to UCLA when they are not using it. There you go.
This is even better than the private jet.
As long as it's not like Gary, I think that could work.
I think this is genius. Like, you know, screw getting the private jet or whatever. Just go have like temporary living. You could set up like a library where the guys can have their sort of remote classes from the facilities. I think this is revolutionary. Let's do it.
Yeah. The downside is all the jokes SC fans have made about rural Indiana because of Notre Dame would backfire just a little bit. Salvador says, is it a side-to-side setup, or are you guys using a background replication service? So we're actually we're in the simulation.
We are in the simulation.
We haven't finished Severance, so maybe we shouldn't talk about Severance.
Oh, have we been severed into two different
something like that
perceptions? Yeah.
No, the funny part about the setup is like it's a long table that turns into a corner at the end.
There it is.
Yeah, that works.
That's one for the podcast listeners.
it was weirder when my camera's on mirror.
Yeah.
And then we did a test recording last week and we sent that to our friends in our Slack channel, and people were like, I can't figure it out. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully we have plans to do some decorating. So it's a little bit, there's more going on behind us, but yeah, we've got our little memorabilia tables.
Today is the 1-year anniversary of moving into this apartment.
Is it really?
Yes. It is literally the 1 year anniversary, and we've yet to put up any of the stuff on the walls.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff that we brought with us to put up on the walls, but yeah, we're not we might be procrastinators. So.
A little bit. Matthew says, quick question, initial thoughts on pivoting to video. I think it's gone well so far.
I think it's good. I hope the listeners are liking it. I think this will be fun.
Yeah. I think so. Alex says, that's the same question about Indiana. Tim says, aside from the number of wins, what do you need to see in order to say the season is a success?
Shout out to Alex for resending in his question with the question in all caps as we asked. So he was just following directions. We see you, Alex. As for Tim's question, the things that we need to see are progress, coaching,
development,
a feeling that players are coming along by the end of the season, and that I guess my feeling would be that like the first month of the season matters less and less the further into the season you go, but like in a positive direction, because like there's a universe where USC absolutely blows out Rice and starts out 4-0, but then sort of falls down in the middle of the season. Like I wouldn't want to see that.
Right.
Just a general feeling that the team is coming together, and that, you know, when they lose, that it's not a blowout, that it's because, you know, circumstances just sometimes happen the way that happens, and not that they were completely outmatched or outcoached or
yeah,
anything like that.
Or if they are outmatched and outcoached, that they improve on those things, right? Like yeah. that they address those things and get better from them. I think that would be, you know, a big hallmark for Lincoln Riley in year one. Absolutely. Josh says, with it coming out that Oklahoma wasn't willing to drop money for bigger and better facilities per Lincoln Riley's request because the program is joining the SEC, will Sooner fans stop crying? I think the thing that's going to get Oklahoma fans over the whole Lincoln Riley thing is winning games and the season started. And they're a good team. They absolutely will win games this year and probably still win the Big 12. So the thing that will rear it up is if SC continues to either has success or fails dramatically. And if they do one of those two things, I think Oklahoma fans will be in their feelings either way.
Michael, what year is it?
2022.
How many years has it been since 2006?
Fair enough.
Thanks. That's my answer.
Bradley, if USC wins the first three games convincingly, will they be ranked in the top 10? Yes.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Are you kidding me? Like, I think the pollsters are looking for any reason to put SC as high as they possibly can.
I think the better question is, will USC be ranked in the top 5? I'm already seeing USC ranked in the top 10. Fansided just put out a top 50. Fansided.com, my employers put out a top 50 with USC at number 9, I think. So yeah, it's more will USC be top 5? And my guess would be yes. I think there will be losses in the beginning of the season that open that up from other teams, and also any excuse to move USC up with Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams running the show, I think will be taken. Yes.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, as great as it is to I think from the fan perspective to root for a blue blood, there is nothing more, I think, annoying than Texas, Florida State, Miami, SC, Michigan, these schools constantly getting labeled being back or not, and then it turns into a joke, and then it turns into this. Like,
Texas is back, yo.
Yes, but people joke about it, but also at the same time, people are so desperate for it to be real.
Yes.
That any sort of thing, and they're like, Texas won a game. Well, we got to put them in the top 10. And it's like, slow down. And I think that SC will absolutely get one of those things. I think if SC comes out and beats Rice 52-9, they're going to go up like 4 spots in the poll. And that's going to be insane. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next question for Tim. For someone who's never been to an away game outside of UCLA, what road game or must-sees in the last 2 years of the Pac-12? I So we were talking about this. Oregon next year as like a must do. You have to do.
Which we haven't done.
Yeah. So. We have to do Autzen Stadium for sure. This year, Rice-Eccles, I think, is a must do, especially with Utah at the top of their game, right?
Yeah, and I like Salt Lake City, so I think it's a good trip for sure.
Yeah. The Weekender, you can never go wrong with the Weekender.
I haven't done all of them, so maybe this is a hot take, but like, is there a bad road trip in the Pac-12?
The only thing that's no, I don't think there's a bad road trip. I also don't think there's a bad thing. There's no such thing as a bad sports road trip unless you lose and had a bad time.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that anything can sort of be fun, right? Like, Arizona Stadium in Tucson, maybe not the most fun stadium to be at, and it might be hot and all that stuff, but, like, it's a good college town. They got good Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit different than our Mexican food, but it's still Mexican food.
Anytime you go to Arizona, just make sure it's a night game. Like, Arizona, yeah. Arizona State, just make sure it's a night
game.
They
got Whataburgers.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Portillo's.
Can't go wrong with it. Yeah, absolutely. Ross says, a big fan of Kyle Ford. Where does he sit in the wide receiver rotation with all the studs SC gained over the offseason?
Well, see, and this is the big question with all the transfers, right? Because there are just a lot behind Jordan Addison. I think there's a lot of questions. I think Kyle Ford could end up being better than Brendan Rice and Bynum, Terrell Bynum, and the rest of them that have come in. Mario Williams, or whatever. He could also be behind those guys because we don't know where they fit
in
USC. We also don't know where he's at. I think he was certainly progressing, but we still need to see how he progresses from injury. So this fall camp is going to be huge because we're going to be able to get a little bit more of a sense of which of these transfers can actually contribute and which, you know, I've always said, it's like a 50-50 proposition. Like, some of these guys are not going to pan out for one reason or another.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very curious about what happens with the wide receiver rotation because there's so many dudes that I don't know. I can't even guess. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if someone who was a stalwart last year, maybe like a Gary Bryan or a mm-hmm. Taj Washington, ends up maybe on the outside looking in. And not because they're not worthy, but just because there's so many different dudes.
Yeah,
I don't know. Someone's going to get left out, right? Like,
the only thing we know for sure is that Jordan Addison is wide receiver one. That's the only thing we know.
Absolutely. And like one of like six dudes could be number two.
Yeah.
You don't exactly know. Daniel says, it feels like SC keeps hinting at an alternate uniform, at least the retro stripes. If SC is undefeated going into the UCLA game, will they unveil them then? No, they should not do that. That would be a bad idea because you know what happens? Let's just say hypothetically.
You lose
that game. You can never wear those jerseys ever again. And you don't screw up the mojo. If you're undefeated, you keep wearing what was mm-hmm. what got you all those wins. Also, in
USC UCLA is also one of the great uniform spectacles in college football
because of the colors. You don't need a special uniform.
Yeah, it's like that's not the game I would do it for. I am hoping we see those retro spikes, stripes. Sometimes I don't think there's any chance it happens this year, but
I would give it a year. Pete Carroll's first year they were wearing the stripes, and then I remember going to the UCLA game, there were rumors about a new jersey for that UCLA game, and they ended up not wearing them until the next season, which was the 2002 season when they went to the chevrons. So yeah, things can absolutely change in that sense. A couple more questions before we wrap this up. Alex says, would you rather SC play Oklahoma in a bowl game this season or SC play Michigan in a bowl game? It's got to be Oklahoma, even though the storylines would be exciting for like 30 seconds and then probably extremely nauseating.
So I would only want to play Oklahoma if I felt very confident that USC would win that game, because playing Oklahoma and losing that game is not a universe that
you're supposed to be optimistic.
I am optimistic. I just don't want to deal with Oklahoma fans, and like losing to them would just give them ammunition for another two decades. So I don't know. I think it would be fun to play Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be fun to play either one of them.
Either like one.
You, blue blood on blue blood is why you root for college football and why college football is fun. Big brands playing each other. Last question comes from Samuel. What do you think of the 2022 EA F1 game or any of the EA F1 games? So this is the second year that EA has been in charge of the F1 game, even though last year they really didn't have much development because they bought Codemasters, who makes the game like 18 months ago or something like that. But this is the first one that EA had more of an input on. There's a lot of mistakes, but I don't necessarily think they're EA mistakes. I think everyone just loves to make EA the scapegoat. And my overwhelming thought about sports games is that the problem with sports games and why they are never satisfying as a consumer is because they're on a one-year development plan. And as someone who has worked on an engineering team, web and doing web development and stuff like that, it everything takes a long time to put together. It takes a long time to strategize, a long time to wireframe, a long time to get things developed, go through alpha, beta, and all those different testing things. Like, everything takes forever. And so when you have this process where you have to put out one every single year because of your contractual agreements with the leagues, it really limits your ability to develop properly and have features that are actually pushing the envelope and the game improving from year to year. And so people end up getting so disappointed because, well, when they go buy the new Call of Duty, it's gotten significantly better since, you know, 3 years ago when they released the previous one or what have you. So I think that ends up making sports games inherently disappointing. That said, this year's game, I think, much better than last year's, where last year's left off. But man, the AI is pretty good.
All I want is for them to take some of the time they put into making the graphics look utterly amazing, which they do look utterly amazing.
Yes.
But take some of the time they do in that and put it into fixing the technical problems that make the game not fun.
Yes.
Because like, we're in a racing league, so like we want to play this game every week. That's my rig right behind me.
Racing thing. Yeah.
We want to enjoy this game once a week with our friends playing like competitive races, and yet every single week there is something that drives everybody crazy. The AI being stupid, some sort of weird glitch that causes you to lose. You know, the last weekend, I had an AI run into me in the. Like literally run through the back of me during a safety car and damage my rear wing, basically ruining my race. Like that kind of thing is annoying. So fix the glitches and right. Spend less time on the, I 100% agree with you, Michael. We would all be better off if these were on, you know, re-release the game every couple of years, but the money will not allow that to happen. So like, I get it, but that's gives me some hope for the NCAA football game.
The first year should be very good because they will put an entire development cycle into it.
Right? Yes. So I'm hopeful that maybe we'll miss out on some of the worst things that we see in other sports games because this was a game that is going to have to be completely remade for the modern video game.
Right.
So hopefully that's the thing that does it. But
yeah,
you know, who knows? They're still going to get my money. So that's, and they know that, and that's part of the problem.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's going to wrap up our first ever live show here on Retro Radio, episode 435. It's been a blast. As always, you know where to reach us. You can subscribe to us, especially here right on YouTube. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. We'll be back next Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, be sure to give us a 5-star review. If you can are on Spotify, follow us there. You can follow us anywhere you can find a podcast. So we are there. Our email address is always reignofjoy@fansided.com and our phone number 213-373-1USC.
Was that not supposed to do it a second time?
Do we do that at the end?
I don't remember
either. Anyways, shout out to all you guys in the comments and watching us.
Yes.
This has been a blast. We couldn't do it without you guys. We fully appreciate you. Shout out to Matthew and Randy and Alex and Tim and Everest and Ross and Samuel and Josh and Bradley and Patrick and Salvador and whoever else I didn't miss. I'm sorry. Shout out to all you guys. You're all special. And we'll see you next week.
See ya.
See ya.